watching Winters take shallow breaths.
When he'd pushed me down the stairs and came to see me in the hospital, he said he'd finished the job.
She drew a breath and winced, then looked up at Max's grim face.
Thank you for stopping me. I couldn't have lived with knowing I was like him.
Max looked away for a moment, a muscle spasmodically twitching in his cheek. You could never be like him. Caroline raised a trembling hand to touch the twitching muscle, smoothing it.
I know. In my head, I know. But it's those darn thoughts in your heart that take over in the middle of the night. I used to hate myself for not fighting back. In my head, I knew I couldn't. That he was bigger, stronger. He held the power, all the cards. It never stopped me from thinking in the middle of the night that I should have.
Max swallowed. Caroline could see his throat working as he brought himself back into control. But now you fought back. She bent one tiny corner of her mouth into the best smile she could manage. Any more would hurt too much. But now that it was over, now that the adrenaline rush had crashed, the reality of their situation was closing in. She needed to show him strength, to keep him from seeing her as the battered, pathetic wreck she was sure she appeared to be. But as important as her strength was for Max, she realized, it was more important she be strong for herself. It was part of healing, part of regathering her self-esteem, her self-respect. She took an exaggerated look down at Rob's unconscious body.
So I did.
It worked, and Max smiled back. A start on the road back to normalcy, even though his smile didn't quite reach his tortured eyes. She picked up Max's cane and handed it to him. Max recoiled as if the cane were a live snake. I don't want it anymore. I'll get a new one. Caroline examined the cane closely, then tossed the cane to the carpet, and it rolled to a stop next to Rob's motionless body. With great drama, she declared,
"Consider that a divorce."
Max snorted a surprised laugh, and Caroline turned to him. With effort, she gave him a half wink with the eye that was less swollen.
"I always wanted to say that."
Max shook his head. "Let's go, Caro." As a group, they turned from the room, David supporting Max so he could walk from the room on his own 2 feet, Tom supporting his mother. Caroline stopped when she reached Lieutenant Ross.
"I'm Caroline Stewart."
Ross searched Caroline's face intently.
"So you are."
It was said with finality. Acceptance. Caroline looked back over her shoulder to where Winters lay in a puddle of his own blood.
"He's unconscious. I did it. I'll be glad to give you a statement whenever you like."
Ross tilted her head, still studying her.
"I'm looking forward to hearing the whole story, Ms. Stewart. But first, let's get you to a hospital."
Chapter 25. Asheville, Monday, March 19th, 5 p.m.
"You were lucky."
The nurse's tone was brusque, but her hands were gentle as she treated the cuts on Caroline's face.
"The two of you are alive."
Caroline looked over at Max, whose lips were thin, his face pale under the growth of his beard. He couldn't stand seeing her in pain. But the nurse was right. They were lucky to be alive. Others weren't so lucky. Max had gently broken the news of the people Rob had murdered on his way to tracking her down, including Cy Edelman. She was still numb. Sweet old Mr. Edelman. His body had been in the car with her, halfway from Chicago, and she hadn't known. She shuddered, not for the first time since walking from the cabin. And Evie. Her mind still was unable to comprehend the vicious, senseless attack on her friend. And all the others. So many lives destroyed.
Miss Stewart?
The nurse was frowning at her, concern clouding her eyes.
Did you hear me? It's all over. You are alive.
Caroline managed only a weak smile, wincing when her lip burned. The nurse obviously thought she was in shock. Maybe she was.
I know. I'm just thinking about all those who aren't. Don't, Mom. Don't think about them right now.
Tom was sitting in a chair in the corner, his back hunched as he watched every move the nurse made. He hadn't left her side. Worry for her condition gave him a drawn look that no child should ever wear. But her son was no longer a child. After this weekend, any remnants of his childhood were gone. Still, she couldn't keep from mourning the loss, the incredible waste.
I have to, Tom. I can't not think about them.
She flinched when the nurse touched a bruise, then made herself consider the living instead of mourning the dead.
How's Detective Jolly? He's in surgery.
The nurse answered, blotting at Caroline's lip.
Touch and go.
She met Caroline's eyes.
We're praying.
Caroline drew a breath. It hurt. She had two cracked ribs, one of which had come within a fraction of an inch of puncturing her lung.
So am I. How's the little boy, Nicky Thatcher?
He's fine. It was a deep voice, husky and unsteady. Caroline turned her head to see a tall man with light red hair and big brown eyes filling the doorway of the little ER cubicle. With an impatient tisk, the nurse pulled Caroline's face back away from the doorway.
You're Nicky's daddy,
Caroline said to the wall. How'd you know? He'd entered, was standing to her left, just out of her peripheral vision.
He has your eyes. He's a brave boy, Special Agent Thatcher.
I know. Thatcher's voice trembled. He cleared his throat. He told me about how you untied him and told him to hide by the road.
He did what I said then?
Yes.
Good. I wasn't sure if he was in the cabin or not there at the end.
He'd run. He said he ran away when Winters carried you back to the other room, that your feet were still tied up because you untied him first. Detective Lambert found him hiding in some bushes and was bringing him back when Winters started shooting. Thatcher's voice faltered, and once again he cleared his throat. You probably saved his life. He's upstairs in the pediatric ward, playing with a social worker who seems to think he's come through all this amazingly. For now, at least. We'll be watching him for any signs of trouble later. He wants to see you when you're able. He wants to prove me wrong. Curiosity had Caroline turning her head again.
About what? Ouch!
She added to the nurse when her face was pulled back once again.
Then keep still,
the nurse snapped. Then her eyes smiled.
Or no lollipop for you.
Caroline quirked up one corner of her mouth in appreciation for the nurse's attempt to lift spirits.
Wrong about what, Agent Thatcher?
She repeated. Nicky says you're his guardian angel. He wants to prove to me that you're not of this world. Caroline found her heart warming, the little boy's fanciful imagination taking some of the edge off her own numbing grief.
I'm sorry to have to disappoint him. I'd like to see him when my own personal Florence Nightingale here is finished with the reconstruction. I'm finished. Is she always so difficult?
The nurse asked Max. Max's hand ran over her hair, still trembling as the events of the day continued to sink in. Yes. Yes, she is. He carefully lowered himself to sit on the side of the bed when the nurse backed her way out of the crowded cubicle. I never got a chance to thank you, Agent Thatcher. Thatcher moved his shoulders in something less than a shrug. It's my job. He carefully searched Caroline's face. I don't know what to call you. For 2 weeks, you've been Mary Grace Winters in my mind. Caroline reached up to cover Max's hand, which had come to rest on her shoulder.
I'm Caroline Stewart. I couldn't go back to being Mary Grace if I tried.
Thatcher nodded, his expression very sober. I suppose not. When you're ready, I have a few questions for you. Caroline regarded him, now equally sober.
I gave my statement to Lieutenant Ross. Rob wanted me to give him Tom. He wanted me to tell everyone he never touched us, that I'd run away because I had another man, that I was unfaithful to him, that I was an unfit mother.
Max muttered something under his breath, and Caroline patted his hand.
He was in my apartment in Chicago when Dana called from the hospital saying Evie had been attacked.
She swallowed and pushed the image from her mind.
He wasn't worried that Evie could identify him. He said he'd used another name in a disguise. He was just perturbed he couldn't use the same disguise again.
He didn't know we'd found his disguises, Thatcher remarked.
I guess not. We changed cars a couple times. Twice. I didn't know Si's body was in the trunk of the first car.
She forced her voice to steady. She'd made it through the discourse with Lieutenant Ross without breaking down. But while Ross had been kind, she hadn't looked at her the same way Thatcher was looking at her now, with eyes so kind and compelling that they pushed her close to tears.
He changed cars again a few hours before dawn. The last one was the white van you confiscated at the cabin. I was tied up in the back when we stopped again. I thought we were changing cars again when he opened the back door and put Nicky in the back. He never touched him, other than to tie him up, at least not that I saw.
Thatcher's eyes closed, his chest heaving in silent relief. When his eyes opened, he'd regained his composure. Thank you.
You're welcome. He kept forgetting about Nicky as the day passed. He'd remember all of a sudden, then he'd forget again. I kept wondering how he planned to explain away kidnapping Nicky when he was forcing me to tell everyone he was the perfect husband and father. But by that time I thought Nicky had gotten away and didn't want to draw Rob's attention to him. I honestly think he snapped there at the end. He didn't seem to give any thought or worry to the policeman he shot. I don't even know if he remembered doing it.
She finished, leaning against Max, so tired after relating all the details once again. Thatcher's jaw clenched. I hope the jury finds that argument compelling when they sentence him to the death penalty. Caroline looked sideways at Tom to see if the notion had any impact on her son. His expression didn't seem to change. He was still grim and angry. She supposed he was entitled. She stifled her sigh and turned her attention back to Thatcher.
How is Detective Jolly, really?
Thatcher looked away. He might die. And he felt guilty. It was clear to see.
Not because of you,
Caroline said softly. Thatcher's handsome face twisted. I don't agree. I was trying to save my son. I didn't care about anything else, anybody else. He closed his eyes. Not even you, Caroline Stewart.
So?
Caroline managed a smile when his eyes flew open, surprise evident on his face, guilt obvious in his eyes.
So you were thinking of your son? So was I 7 years ago when I escaped.
Her smile disappeared as her own thoughts turned inward, to the guilt churning inside her own soul.
I took the coward's way out then, Agent Thatcher.
Caroline, Max interrupted. Caroline shook her head, then closed her eyes against the resulting pain of even the smallest movement. Immediately she opened her eyes, unable to bear the new images that now haunted her mind.
Because I was thinking of myself and my son 7 years ago, Rob continued to move freely. How many people are dead because I did nothing? Susan Crenshaw's baby will grow up without a mother. That police officer guarding your house? I heard he had little kids.
A sob choked her voice.
Their father will never come home because I let Rob go. I never...
She felt the tears running down her cheeks and made no move to wipe them away. Max brushed a tissue across her cheeks, drying them.
I was afraid he'd find me, hurt me. Dana said it's not always about me. I wish I'd figured that out before all these people were killed.
Thatcher made a sound in his throat. I wish I'd been able to see the future. Tony Ross wishes she'd been able to see what an evil man he was. Ben Jolly wishes he'd helped you years ago when he suspected you were getting the living tar beaten out of you. Gabe Farrell wishes he'd pushed harder to find evidence against Winters years ago. Bottom line is, you couldn't have known he'd do these things. And you did try. You tried to tell the world when you took out that restraining order. Don't blame yourself now. She stared at him, desperately wishing she could take his words to heart.
Part of me knows you're right, but I can't seem to stop thinking about all the lives Rob ruined. My friend Cy Edelman is dead because he cared about me. And my friend Evie.
Caroline's voice broke again as devastating emotion surged.
She might never wake up.
She's awake, Caroline. David appeared in the doorway and eased his way past a console of blinking lights to stand next to Thatcher. Caroline sagged back against Max.
Thank God.
David nodded. Amen. I just talked to Dana. It took me over an hour to get to the right extension. Dana was sleeping in the visitor's waiting room when they found her. I told her you were safe. David reached down and touched the tip of Caroline's toe through the sheet. She couldn't talk for a few minutes, Caroline. She was crying too hard. She wanted me to tell you she was sorry for the things she said. She was afraid you'd die with words between you. Caroline closed her eyes, remembering the pain of Dana's words. The greater pain of realizing her best friend had been so right after all.
She shouldn't apologize,
she said, her voice husky.
She was right, as usual. But how is Evie?
Dana said Evie woke up about 3 hours ago. Her vital signs are good, although she'll have to undergo additional surgeries. They don't yet know the extent of her injuries or how long she'll be in the hospital. David sighed. She can't remember anything about the attack. That's probably for the best, Max murmured. She'll remember when she's able. We'll be there for her when she does. Tom abruptly rose from his chair and leaned over to squeeze Caroline's hand.
Mom, will you be okay if I leave for a little while?
She turned as far as her neck permitted, seeing half his face from the corner of her eye.
Sure, honey. David, will you get Tom something to eat?
Tom shook his head.
David, I'll meet you in the cafeteria in 10 minutes. I need to talk to Agent Thatcher first. Do you have a few minutes, sir?
Caroline watched Thatcher thoughtfully consider her son. Sure, Tom. Let's go. Stephen followed as the boy he'd pictured as Robbie Winters walked purposefully to the end of the hall. At 14, Tom Stewart was as tall as he was. Give the boy a few years, and he'd fill out to be every bit as big as his father. Stephen's jaw clenched at the thought of Rob Winters, currently in the operating room next to Ben Jolly, ironically enough. Ben was having Winters's bullet removed from his abdominal cavity, while Winters was having fragments of his shattered skull removed from his brain. Caroline Stewart crushed Winters's skull and cheekbones with Hunter's cane. A grim sense of satisfaction filled him, and he made not the slightest effort to push it away. Tom stopped next to a window and stared out. Stephen waited, suspecting what the boy had on his mind. Tom's jaw hardened as he frowned out the window.
Where is he now?
Your father? Tom's fists clenched at his sides.
He's not my father. Where is he?
Stephen hesitated. Right now, he's in surgery. I don't think it's a good idea for you to see him.
I don't want to. Will you put him in jail?
Stephen nodded slowly. Pending his preliminary hearings, yes. A minute went by, and Stephen waited.
Will you keep his identity secret?
Tom finally demanded. Softly. Too softly. Stephen considered for only a moment. No.
He won't even make it to trial, will he, sir?
Tom's voice was deceptively mild and completely at odds with the stiff set of his shoulders. Stephen found himself becoming defensive at the boy's intimation, mostly because the same thought had been rolling around his own mind ever since Jonathan Lambert slapped the cuffs on Winters, unconscious and bleeding. It's the responsibility of the police to protect every prisoner in custody, regardless of who he is or what he's done.
That's not what I asked, sir.
Stephen stared long and hard at Tom's rigid back, then shook his head. If anyone was entitled to the truth, it was this young man and his mother. Once the prison population finds out he beat that boy to death 2 weeks ago, probably not. Tom visibly relaxed.
Good.
He turned to meet Stephen's eyes, and Stephen was struck by the cold maturity he saw there.
I hope Detective Jolly recovers, sir, and that your little boy doesn't have too many problems coming out of everything that happened today. And if he comes to trial, we'll come back to testify.
He offered his hand. Thank you, Tom. Stephen shook the boy's hand as if he were an adult. I wish you and your mother a full recovery as well. Tom stared him straight in the eye.
I accept your wishes for my mother. I'm fine.
Stephen watched as Tom walked towards the cafeteria, a distinct spring in the young man's step, and felt the cloak of sadness envelop, swift and complete. No, you're not fine, son, he murmured. You're definitely not fine. None of us will be fine for a good long time. With a sigh, Stephen turned for the surgical waiting room, needing to check on Ben Jolly one last time before taking his son home. Jolly had sought absolution for his part in aiding Rob Winters's sins by making himself into a human shield. Nicky was safe. Stephen hoped Ben Jolly would live to find the absolution he desired. They'd moved Caroline to a regular hospital room where they would keep her for observation for another day. The nurse made sure she was comfortable, offered to find a cane in the hospital supply room for Max, then took her leave. They were alone for the first time since yesterday morning, Max realized, stunned. His whole world had been utterly changed in the space of 36 hours. He was unsure of what to say. Which words were the right ones? He was sitting on the edge of the hospital bed, holding her hand. Caroline was leaning back against the pillows, resting, her eyes closed, her chest rising and falling with each quiet breath she drew. Each breath was one he hadn't been certain he'd ever see her take again just a few hours before. Her face was still bruised, but the swelling on her jaw and lips was diminished. He wasn't sure which words were the right ones, so he used the ones least likely to be the wrong ones. I love you, Caroline, he whispered, not sure if she was awake or not. Her lips curved and her eyes opened, still the same incredible blue he'd found unforgettable the first moment they met.
I love you, too.
He hesitated. Can we talk now? Her gaze dropped to the bed sheet, then rose back up to meet his.
Yes.
She was nervous. It nearly broke his heart. Caroline, I... He found the words simply wouldn't come, and he looked away, hoping for divine inspiration.
I'm sorry, Max,
Caroline said quietly, going very still. He turned his head back so quickly it throbbed. He ignored the pain. There was something in her tone that frightened him. Why?
I'm sorry I hurt you.
She leaned back against the pillows and closed her eyes. He watched her swallow and lick her lips.
I know I hurt you when I said no to your marriage proposal. Dana told me I'd be lucky if you still wanted me when I came to my senses.
She swallowed again,
I know you love me. I know you raced down here to rescue me. But now that the smoke's cleared, I understand you might still be angry with me. I want you to know that I figured out when I got back to my apartment that I'd pushed you away because I was afraid, and I hated myself for that. I wish I'd had one more day, one more hour to call you and tell you that I'd marry you, that I was sorry and stupid, that I'd truly left my old life in the past and I was unconditionally yours. Now...
She sighed, her eyes still closed.
Now... I'll divorce Rob publicly. Everyone in Chicago will know who I was. Everyone here in Asheville will know who I now am.
She opened her eyes, and Max felt his heart clench at the misery he saw there.
But you'll never know for sure what I would have done. Every time you look at me, you'll wonder if I would have chosen you over my stupid fear.
Max swallowed the enormous lump of emotion back down his throat. That she should be worrying about that after all she'd been through. I realized right after you left that I'd been too hasty. I was wrong, Caroline. He increased the pressure on her hands, still careful to keep his touch gentle. I wasn't wrong to want a life with you. A legal married life with legal children. But I was wrong to force you to choose when you were so afraid. He dropped one hand and lightly caressed the side of her jaw that wasn't hurt. You had every right to be terrified of him, Caroline. I wasn't thinking about what you'd been through, only how much I was hurting at that moment. I decided to step back and work through all the ways we could solve the problem and give us both what we needed. He picked up her hand, desperately needing to touch her. I told my family. Her eyes widened.
You did?
Yes. They wanted to help. They all said they'd do whatever needed to be done to make it so you'd never need to be afraid again. Peter had a lawyer you could trust. Her eyes filled and she blinked, sending fat tears sliding down her cheeks.
Who?
Max smiled, remembering the warmth of his family, the moment he would never forget. Himself. The lump rose in his throat again when he remembered his mother and her words. Ma said I should go get you from your apartment, that you were welcome in her family. He felt his own cheeks become wet, and he choked back the emotion once more. That you were welcome to her son.
Max?
Her voice broke. And then, he continued, now unable to stop, David was going to drive me to your place when Tom called and said you were missing. I thought my heart was going to stop right there. I thought I'd never see you again. He clenched his eyes closed, opening them when Caroline leaned forward and wiped the tears from his cheeks with trembling hands. He found her eyes inches away and stared hard, telling himself she was alive, that it was over. I was so scared, Caroline, he whispered, his voice shaking. He had to look away. I was so scared of what he was doing to you, that you'd die thinking I was still angry, that I didn't love you enough.
I didn't,
she whispered back fiercely.
I'm alive. And I never thought once.
She took his face between her hands and tugged until he looked her in the eye again.
Not even once that you didn't love me. I knew I couldn't have hurt you if you hadn't loved me so much.
He shuddered at the feel of her hands on his face and turned enough to kiss the palm of one of her hands, then the other. What do we do now? He asked, his voice husky. She smiled, her dimple appearing, and his heart did a slow turn in his chest.
Well, now,
she said, her drawl exaggerated.
Your mama said I was welcome to her son.
He nodded, feeling his own lips turn up. Caroline's eyes danced.
Did she say which one?
His bark of surprised laughter filled the quiet hospital room. Excuse me?
Well,
Caroline reasoned, her hands still on his face.
Peter's taken. That leaves sons number 2 and 3.
She tilted her head slightly, feigning a frown of concentration.
Which one to choose? Both are handsome.
She broke off when he covered her mouth lightly with his, her giggle escaping from beneath his lips. He lifted his head to find her eyes laughing, even as the tip of her tongue touched a sore spot on her lip.
I guess I deserve that,
she said with a chuckle. You did, he answered with mock severity, even as he grinned at her smiling face. Then he watched her eyes grow serious as his own mirth subsided. Marry me, Caroline.
Yes.
Her smile bloomed again, her eyes radiant despite the bruises on her face. She pulled his face down and lightly touched her lips to his.
I love you.
He touched his forehead to hers, his heart truly at peace. Let's go home, Caroline. Chapter 26. Chicago, Sunday, April 22nd, 3 p.m.
Made it!
Tom's mouth distorted into a disgusted grimace as Peter and one of his sons gave each other high fives for a two-pointer Peter had slipped past Tom. Max reached out and squeezed Tom's shoulder, understanding. They'd been playing for an hour on the basketball court he'd had restored at the end of his driveway a few weeks before. But Tom's mind wasn't on his game. Neither of them had been able to focus. Max wondered if he'd even draw an easy breath again without Caroline being in the same room, within touching distance. For days after their return from Asheville, he never left her side, never moved more than an arm's reach away. He found himself waking in the middle of the night, nightmares filling his mind. If she was asleep, he'd listen to her breathe, gently stroke a lock of her hair between his fingers, anything to prove to himself she was all right. But more often than not, he found her awake already, her sleep disturbed by nightmares of her own. More often than not, he found her staring out the window of their bedroom, her mind far away. Days were significantly better than nights. Max's family had descended on his house this sunny Sunday afternoon for a picnic lunch. He knew better. It was his family's way of supporting him and Caroline and Tom. The days when at least one of them hadn't been in the neighborhood had been too few to bother counting. They brought food, magazines, little sundries they just happened to have bought one too many of. He and Caroline didn't lift a finger in the weeks that followed their return from Asheville. Ma and the girls had done everything for them, cooking, cleaning. Kathy even ironed his boxer shorts. It might have become annoying had there not been so much love in every gesture. Everyone wanted to help. No one knew what to say. So they said nothing. They just rallied around his new little family and refused to let them falter or fall. His new little family. The very thought took some of the edge off the tension that hadn't yet ebbed. The psychologist promised it would, in good time. Max had stopped wondering when that would be. It would come when it came, and not before. There were lessons in patience that came out of futility. There were truly things that were beyond his control. How quickly his little family became normal was one of those things. Things started to pick up a few weeks after their return. They moved all of Caroline and Tom's things from their old apartment to Max's house 4 weeks after, leaving nothing behind except a blood stain on the dining room carpet. Dana showed up the next night with a box of hair color, and an hour and a half later, Caroline was a blonde. It suited her, he thought, studying her across the backyard. She sat at the old picnic table with her sisters and Peter's wife, poring over old issues of Bride magazine Kathy had bought at a yard sale. Amidst teasing and laughter, his mother and sisters were effectively planning their wedding. Caroline just sat back and let them, content to be swept along. She looked up in that moment, as if feeling his eyes on her, and smiled. It was a smile of encouragement, of sharing, of gratitude. He'd been put off by her gratitude at first, not wanting to accept it, feeling whatever he'd done for her hadn't been nearly enough. But he'd come to understand that her gratitude was for so many things he himself didn't directly impact. Being part of a family, being free, waking up every morning, and finally knowing she was safe. Kathy jabbed Caroline's shoulder to direct her attention to something in one of the magazines, and Caroline laughed out loud, the joyful sound carrying the short distance to where he stood. She shook her head vehemently, her new blonde hair swinging around her face. The golden hair did suit her. It framed her face, set off the fine porcelain of her skin, made her eyes seem an even more intense blue, made Tom look even more like her son.
"I think they're trying to break our momentum, Phil," Peter commented dryly from behind him. "We've threatened them with our skill and prowess."
Max turned to his brother, one brow lifted in as sarcastic an expression as he could muster. He'd learned even sarcasm required energy.
"It's 20-2 hours. Last week we beat you 40-0. I hardly think you need our help to threaten your skill and prowess."
He looked over at Tom, whose eyes still hadn't left his mother. "You ready for more?" Tom sighed.
"I don't feel much like playing today." He turned to Peter's son. "I'm sorry, Phil. I just can't seem to concentrate."
Phil tossed the ball in the air and caught it in one hand.
"No problem. You hungry?"
Tom forced a grin.
"I can always eat."
Together, the boys started back toward the house, and Max waited until they were out of earshot before he let his own sigh escape.
"Tom's upset because Evie was supposed to come today," he said quietly. "But she changed her mind at the last minute. She couldn't face us," she said.
Peter stared at the women gathered around the table and shook his head. "She has nothing to be ashamed of. But I guess I can understand how she'd feel like she would." Max pursed his lips, watching Caroline point to a page in one of the magazines.
"She finally let Caroline come see her last week," Max swallowed. "Caroline went straight to bed when she came back home. She cried for 2 hours."
"It was worse than she thought, then?" Max nodded, his throat tight.
"Evie will never have children. Her face is disfigured. He broke all the little bones in her right hand, and she probably will never regain full use of it. But worst of all, she blames herself."
Peter was silent for a moment.
"Why?"
Max sighed again.
"Right before Winters attacked her, he asked if her parents hadn't taught her better than to get into cars with strange men."
Peter's face twisted. "Bastard."
"Who?"
David walked up the driveway from the street where he'd parked his car, a bag of charcoal over his shoulder. Max just lifted his brows, and David added his side to the mix.
"My favorite homicidal maniac,"
David said, and lowered the bag of charcoal to the blacktop. He looked around.
"Evie didn't come, huh?"
Max shook his head. "No." David continued looking around, searching for something, or someone.
"Dana didn't think she would."
Peter looked surprised.
"You've been talking to Dana? Caroline's friend Dana?"
His brows furrowed.
"Don't tell me. Don't even tell me," he added darkly. "I don't want to know."
David's lips quirked up.
"It's not what you think. We're friends, and that's the God's truth."
Max nodded.
"He's given it to you straight for once. He helped us move Dana's shelter a few weeks ago. He is now persona most definitely grata."
"I fixed her car, too." David's tone was smug.
Peter groaned, his bass rumble filling the air. Friends, but you're getting prepared, just in case. David grinned. Well, I'm a careful man. My big brother taught me to plan. Max chuckled. Shut up and help me get the fire started. Ma's been wondering where you've been with that charcoal. As if on cue, Ma appeared at the back door, the cordless phone in her hand. Here's your charcoal, Ma, David called. Phoebe looked over at them, her normally happy face sober.
Just put it over by the grill, Davy. The phone's for Caroline, Max. She'll want to take it in here. You'll want to be with her.
The light atmosphere of a few moments before dissipated, and Max felt his heart begin to pound heavily. Who is it, Ma?
It's Special Agent Thatcher.
Caroline leaned her head back against the sofa cushions, stunned, numb, sick to her stomach, feeling she never dreamed she'd feel upon hearing the news that Rob Winters was dead. Agent Thatcher had insisted on telling her himself, not allowing the prison administration to call her after Winters was found dead in the lavatory that morning. Apparently Tom's wish had come true. The other prisoners hadn't welcomed Rob with open arms after finding out he'd beaten that young black man in Asheville to death. Her stomach roiled, wondering how many other lives Rob had stolen. Lives no one would ever know about. Murders no one would ever suspect. He'd paid the ultimate price for his sins. Caroline numbly wondered if it was enough.
No,
she thought, thinking about the unspeakable damage done to Evie. The loss of Rob's miserable life wasn't nearly enough.
I can't believe it,
she whispered.
I just can't believe it.
Max took her hand in his, gently squeezing once, then holding on tight. It's over, Caroline. He can never hurt you again.
He's dead?
Tom asked from the archway separating the living room from the kitchen. He stood tall, feet spread wide, his arms crossed over his chest. He filled the space, seeming broader, bigger somehow. Caroline twisted around to meet his eyes, his cold, hard eyes. His mouth was pressed into a firm line.
Tom?
I asked a question, Mom. Is he dead?
Each word was spaced deliberately. Caroline felt her insides tense, fearing his response, fearing it would be one of celebration, elation, a triumphant fist in the air. She didn't want him to cry, not even to grieve, but she didn't want him to celebrate the taking of yet another life.
Yes,
she answered quietly. His shoulders sagged, even as his feet remained firmly planted in place. His hands clenched his upper arms, and the previously defiant stance became more of a protective cocoon. His head dropped forward until his chin touched his chest. Max struggled to his feet, his expression rife with concern. Tom? Caroline glanced up and felt the sting of tears. Max was as burdened for the emotional health of her son as she was. She reached up for his hand, and he grasped it blindly, not taking his eyes off Tom's dejected form.
Tom, say something,
Caroline said, trying to keep her voice even, failing. Without lifting his head, Tom spoke.
I want to be happy, Mom.
He hunched his shoulders forward, keeping his head down.
Damn it.
His voice broke.
I knew he'd die. I knew it. I dreamed of saluting the lucky guy that carved him down to bone. But now I can't. I want to be happy he's dead, but I can't.
Caroline blinked, and her vision cleared. Tom's shoulders shook now, but he remained where he stood, isolated and so very alone. Squeezing Max's hand, she crossed the distance and put her arms around her son, pulling his head down to her shoulder.
Then how do you feel?
She whispered.
Tell me how you feel.
Tom's body shuddered as he exhaled on a sob.
I'm so mad.
Caroline ran her hand over his hair, soothing.
Mad?
Tom nodded, his face buried against her bare neck.
I'm so mad that he was who he was.
Caroline understood this emotion.
That he never was who you wanted him to be?
Another nod.
And I'm mad at myself.
Caroline heard Max come up behind her. He put his arms around them both. Mad because you can't find it in you to be happy he's dead? Max asked gently. Because right now you're feeling less than a man because of how you feel? Tom lifted his head from Caroline's shoulder and stared at Max. Surprise and gratitude blended in his expression.
How?
Because you're your mother's son, Max answered simply. Feeling happy right now would be the easy thing, but not necessarily the right thing. You've insisted he was not your father. He wasn't. It takes more to be a father than the donation of DNA. And it takes more to be a man than brute strength and Hollywood courage. But I'm not sure you know what it does take. It takes love and compassion and sacrifice and patience and integrity. My father had all those things. He paused, and Caroline felt him draw a shaky breath. Do you want to know what I'm feeling right now? Tom tilted his head, giving Max the wariest of nods. Max's arms tightened around Caroline. I'm feeling relieved, to be honest. Relieved he can't escape and find us again. I've lost hours of sleep in the last 6 weeks, worrying that he'd find a way to escape and come back to hurt your mother and you. Worrying that we'd spend the rest of our lives looking over our shoulders, waiting for him to jump out from behind a tree. I'm also feeling sad. Heartbroken, really, when I realize you've never known a father like mine was. Men like my father are incredibly rare, I think. I wish I could be half the man he was. But somehow, despite never having the privilege of a father like mine, despite everything you've been through, you're more a man than most men I know. But most of all, I feel proud of you, Tom. I could be no prouder if you were my own son. Her tears now flowing freely, Caroline craned her neck backwards to see Max's face. Compassion filled his eyes, softening the normally hard line of his jaw, and she knew she would never love him more than in that moment. Max looked down and caught her staring and smiled, that tender, sweet smile that turned her heart to mush. Someone cleared a throat, and as a group, the three of them turned toward the kitchen door. David led the pack, but the others were there right behind him. I'm not eavesdropping in the foyer. This is the kitchen, David protested before Caroline could say a word, and it had the effect he'd been trying for. She laughed, even though it came out sounding more like a hiccup. Phoebe pushed her way to the front of the group. Her eyes were damp, but she wore an expression of challenge.
Max, I haven't wanted to be a royal pain all these weeks, but I have some questions for Caroline.
Tom stepped away, smiling a little when Phoebe put her arm around his waist and pulled him against her. Caroline wiped the tears from her cheeks, even as her fingers continued to tremble. Max's arm slid around her waist from behind, holding her tight against the strength of his body.
Yes, Phoebe. What is your question? Questions. Number one, what was your name before?
Caroline blinked. No one in Max's family had asked her any questions since her return, and she wasn't sure why Phoebe had picked this moment to pry.
Mary Grace. Mary Grace.
Phoebe repeated the name as if testing it on her lips.
Appropriate, I think. Will you name your daughter Grace, should you be so blessed?
Caroline blinked again.
I'd considered it.
She had. She twisted around to look up to Max.
If it's okay.
Max looked totally perplexed. It's okay with me. Ma, what's this about?
I'm not finished, son. Will you adopt this boy, Max?
Max started, and Caroline twisted to look back at him again. He was frowning, his brows bunched across his forehead, and he was blushing. Caroline had never seen Max blush before, and the sight was riveting. We haven't talked about that yet, Ma. This isn't the...
Life is too short to think as much as you do, Max. I honestly thought you would have learned that by now. Tom, do you want to be adopted by my son here?
Tom's lips twitched. He liked Phoebe. Caroline knew. He liked her blend of sarcasm and grandmotherly cuddling. Right now, he was enjoying the way Phoebe dressed down her 6.5-foot son as if he were no older than little Petey.
Yes'm. The boy says ma'am,
Phoebe said to no one in particular.
Peter, can you draw up the papers?
Yes, ma, came Peter's easy reply, as if an argument never entered his mind. I'll get on it tomorrow, bright and early.
Then, Caroline, if you're already planning to have a baby with my son...
Max choked on a cough.
And if your son will soon be adopted by my son...
David snickered from the corner of the kitchen.
And since you appear to be unmarried at the moment...
The laugh bubbled right out of Caroline's chest.
Next Saturday, Phoebe. I'll marry your son next Saturday.
Phoebe grinned cagily.
I'll call Father Diven. He'll marry you in short order, just to keep you from living in sin any longer. Tom, come with me. I have half a cow to cook, and David here still hasn't started a fire in the grill.
Yes'm. Tom looked back over his shoulder, the sadness gone from his eyes, if only for now. He smiled, a subdued curving of his lips, but it was sufficient. For now. One by one, each sibling left the small kitchen, each bestowing congratulatory hugs and kisses on Caroline and Max as they made their less than tactful exits. Finally, only David remained. David hesitated, then spoke soberly. You're wrong about one thing, Max. Max raised a brow. And that would be what? David looked away, but not before Caroline caught a glint of light reflecting off the tears in his eyes. Dad was rare, that is true, but not unique. You're his son, and I know he'd be as proud of you today as I am. He left the room quickly, not saying another word. Caroline let her sigh escape and looked up at Max, who was visibly moved.
That was nice, Max.
He swallowed. Yes, it was. He looked down at her then and smiled, his composure restored. Next Saturday. I thought we agreed to wait until you could do the wedding the way you wanted it, with a fancy dress and a cake with two people on top that don't look like us. Caroline stood on her toes and placed a kiss on his chin.
Life's too short to think so much, Max. Kathy can make a cake from a mix, and I don't need a dress that takes weeks to order. Your mother was right. It's time we got on with our lives, don't you think?
He stared into her eyes, her beautiful blue expressive eyes that had captured his heart from the first moment they'd met, and was overcome by a wave of love so intense it weakened his knees. The cute quip on the tip of his tongue was wiped from his mind, replaced by the three words he wanted to be able to say every day for the rest of their lives. I love you, Caroline, he whispered fiercely, his voice shaky, and watched her expression soften, her eyes fill. I promise I'll only make you happy. I promise you'll never be afraid again. She swallowed and raised a trembling hand to his jaw.
I love you, Max. I promise to be your wife. I promise to make a family with you.
He brought her hand to his lips and kissed her palm,
kissed every one of her fingers. Then he drew her into his arms and kissed her lips, long and deep, leaving her sighing and melting against him. "Can we start right now?" he murmured against her hair. She looked up, her lips curving.
"Start what?"
she asked, even though her eyes said she knew. He grinned at her. "Start making that family," he said, and counted to himself, 1, 2, 3. Her cheeks went pink, and she looked over her shoulder.
"Your mother is here, Max."
"My mother made 9 children altogether. My mother knows how it's done." Caroline's laughter filled the room, filled his heart with ease.
"Your mother's son can wait till after lunch,"
she teased. "Promise?" he asked, looking into her eyes and seeing the rest of his life with content anticipation. Her eyes softened again, caressing him.
"I promise, Max."
That is the end of Don't Tell. It was written by Karen Rose and read by Jeff Harding. This has been an Isis Audiobooks presentation. Previous titles by this author include Every Dark Corner, Closer Than You Think, and Alone in the Dark. For further details of our extensive catalog of unabridged audiobooks, please call our free phone number, 0800-731-5637, or visit our website, www.isis-publishing.co.uk.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.